Yeah.
For your information, the fire department has been called to check a smoke odor elsewhere in the building. Please continue regular activities, but we may not move forward until further notice. The elevator has been taken out of service for fire department use.
I told you not to turn my hell of time thing.
For your information, the fire department has been called to check a smoke odor elsewhere in the building. Please continue regular activities, but remain on your floor until further notice.
This is a stress test. Personnel from the Laboratory of Physiological Hygiene will now pass among you to take your blood pressures. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman and host, Dr. Taylor and Mrs. Taylor, Henry and Katie, and all friends and colleagues who are here, friends and colleagues of Henry Taylor, it's an honor to be here. Those last two speakers constitute, between them, a couple of tough acts to follow. I was trying to think of something hard to criticize in my friend Herman Hellerstein's comment, and as someone from the Detroit area, all I can say is, Herman, please go out and buy a new car. I met Henry Taylor in the early 1960s. I was teaching at the University of North Carolina, and one of the students in the course I was teaching at that time, Mort Robbins, worked for the old heart disease control program. He came to me and said they were forming a committee to study the effects of physical activity in cardiovascular disease and hoped to design some experimental studies. One thing led to another, and soon I was a member of a committee chaired by Henry Taylor to plan such activities. I made that excursion that Monty was talking about to Helsinki in 1964 to attend that symposium on physical activity and the heart, and the association with Henry Taylor has been a highlight of my professional career. Henry Taylor believed that observational studies of the relationship between physical activity and cardiovascular disease, though instructive and useful, were and would continue to be inconclusive for several reasons. First, occupational studies, for example, that is, studies following occupational groups of differing on-job physical activity level, suffer from shifts of individuals with mild symptoms to more sedentary occupations, from self-selection of men of above average health into occupations with greater physical demands, from the influence of confounding variables such as cigarette smoking, high blood pressure, and elevated serum cholesterol, and classification errors due to failure to consider adequately recreational activity. Other types of observational studies, not focusing on occupational groups, were unlikely to eliminate all these problems in Dr. Taylor's, from his point of view. Beginning then in the mid-60s, a steering committee was formed with Henry Taylor as chairman to design and oversee a controlled feasibility trial of the role of exercise in primary prevention of coronary heart disease in middle-aged, high-risk American men. Three centers were involved in that feasibility effort, a center here at Minneapolis under the direction of Henry Taylor, one at Pennsylvania State University under the direction of Ellsworth Buskirk, and one at the University of Wisconsin under the direction of Bruno Balke. All three people are obviously here today. A coordinating center at Ann Arbor was set up that later moved to Houston, and that center was under my direction. The studies involved a stage design that required successively greater levels of commitment of the men in the studies in an attempt to examine possible biases due to differential volunteering rates between exercise and control groups. Now, the groups and the populations from which they were selected were as follows. In Minneapolis, a probability sample of telephone subscribers in two residential areas in the city of Minneapolis were employed, and out of that, after contacting 1,528 men in the age range 45 to 54, this screening process, including a weeding out of the faint of the heart and so on, with examinations at each stage in this process, 115 volunteers were produced in that trial for randomization to the active and control groups. At Pennsylvania State University, a roster of employees of that university was constructed, civil service employees plus faculty members. The roster consisted of 1,600 men in the age range 40 to 59, and out of that, again, using this winnowing process, 171 men were then randomized. And at the University of Wisconsin, faculty members were selected, screened systematically again, out of a roster of 497 men aged 40 to 59, 99 volunteers were selected. Now, in that winnowing process, there was midway through it a definition of high risk men, and only men that satisfied these risk criteria were included then for randomization. The categorization by risk status was mainly on the basis of serum cholesterol level, although cigarette smoking history was also included. The exercise prescription for the men in the activated group involved attendance 3 times per week at an exercise session that involved very strenuous mixed activity. Now, the stage design, what we learned about volunteers in that trial and how they might differ from others, were that smokers volunteered less often, that there was little selection out of all of this heavy selection, little influence on serum cholesterol as a selective factor for volunteering status, or blood pressure, or relative weight, and that men with high off-job activity level tended to volunteer more often than others. Now, with respect to results, and here I'm boiling this down to a bare minimum of results, the level of adherence with the assigned exercise prescription dropped to about 50% of the assigned level within the first 6 months of observation, but stayed at that level through 15 months of follow-up. In other words, there was a substantial drop-off early in the first months of the trial, but then stability at about the 50% level after that time. Physical condition, as measured by treadmill grade in a standardized treadmill test at pulse rate 140, was increased in the treatment group as compared to the controls. And as you have already heard, there was, in this high-intensity exercise program, a relatively large number of dropouts from the exercise group, approximately 15%, I believe, at Minnesota, because of musculoskeletal injuries and accidents related to the physical activity demands. Now, we concluded, as Henry Blackburn has noted, several things from this trial. We concluded that middle-aged men can be activated, that they can be kept active with a resultant difference in fitness after more than a year. But we also concluded that a single-factor intervention trial of physical activity in the primary prevention of coronary heart disease was probably not feasible, because of the sample size and cost requirements involved, because of the tens upon tens of thousands of men that would need to be involved. Now, a bit about the role of Henry Taylor in this. He was the prime mover in these studies. He was the steadying influence in the studies. When I can remember a number of these steering committee meetings when I and others were, shall we say, reasoning very closely together, when Henry Taylor really resolved the issue and we parted company, friends, and having moved on toward a solution to the problem, which didn't seem nearly as big after his efforts as it had before. He was the man who believed this particular study could be done, that this feasibility trial could be carried out when a number of people suggested it couldn't, and he was right. It could be done, and it was done. He was the thoughtful, introspective scientist in the study, but also the concerned public health worker. While worrying a great deal about the measurements that were collected, he was worried at least as much about the application of the results of these studies to improved health for the general public. In my experience, very few individuals have the unique blend of qualities that Henry Taylor has. He's a sound, productive scientist and an able epidemiologist, a practical investigator and a motivator of volunteers, I know no better, and a motivator of colleagues, and I know no better at that. He's an extremely competent research strategist and tactician, and that's hard to beat. Now, these feasibility trials, these experimental studies of intervention with physical activity, I'd like to say just a word or two about where this work has led, and then my colleagues who will be speaking after me in this segment of the program will go further with this. Several of us, after this trial, convinced ourselves, and Henry Taylor again was in the vanguard of this group, that a single factor study of primary prevention of coronary heart disease involving physical activity was not feasible, as I've said, and concluded that the first thing to do in this business was to design a multiple factor intervention trial. And so several of us constituted an executive committee, again with Henry Taylor at the point of this, Jerry Stamler and myself involved, in 1969. And for time reference, that was several years before the National Heart and Lung Institute, as it was called at that stage, became active in the intervention trial business. It predated single factor trials like the hypertension detection and follow-up program by 2 or 3 years and the multiple risk factor intervention trial by some 3 to 4 years. Henry, I don't know whatever happened to that jumbo project. I think the outcome of that grant application, and we sat down, I can remember a long weekend or so in an apartment in Arlington, Virginia, where we were putting together a grant application. I don't believe that grant application was approved, disapproved, or anything else. I think it was received. It was reviewed. We attended at least one visit, reverse site visit sort of thing, at Chicago. And I have the impression, partly documented now, that it did have an influence on the policymakers in Washington at the Heart and Lung Institute. It suggested, for example, in the issue of Preventive Medicine, that journal copy devoted to the multiple risk factor intervention trial that was published last year, in the introduction, that particular proposal, that particular jumbo project, as we called it, did have an influence in subsequent decisions. That trial was to involve diet and exercise, cigarettes, and blood pressure control in a factorial type design. Henry Blackburn has suggested that the work of Henry Taylor then in experimental studies was influential and did lead on into the present generation. I'm absolutely convinced that that was the case. He was in the forefront of the movement toward experimental investigation of intervention based on physical activity in the prevention of cardiovascular disease, and he has continued to be associated with the experimental epidemiology of these diseases. On the personal side, I remember very fondly sharing a sabbatical leave period, my wife and I, with Dr. and Mrs. Taylor at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. I remember sharing with him seminars, the 10 days of cardiovascular epidemiology seminar, notably the first one at Makarska, Yugoslavia. He's taught me, and I think all of us, a great deal. It's been a great privilege to work with him and to know him. And with regard to this retirement business, I'm reminded of an anecdote at our school. A few years ago, I attended the 85th birthday party of one of our emeritus faculty members and was in a conversation when a graduate student came up and said, "Professor, I notice you still come to your office every day." And he said, "Oh no, I'm slowing down, only 5 days a week." And I'm sure that describes Henry Taylor.
Thank you, Dr. Remington. The next speaker will be Dr. Bill Haskell, who's currently at the Heart Disease Prevention Program at Stanford University. Bill was project officer of the prevention trials of the 1960s and then served as head of the President's Council on Sports and Physical Fitness as a public health officer. Bill?
Thank you, Larry. It is indeed an honor for me to participate in this symposium. My primary association with Dr. Taylor goes back to 1965 when joining the, I would hope not so old, Dr. Remington, Heart Disease Control Program of the Public Health Service. I became a member of the Physical Activity Ischemic Heart Disease and Planning Committee. Also, following that, was the project officer for the U.S. Public Health Service for the pilot study discussed by Dr. Remington. Since that time, I consider myself fortunate to have continued in association with Dr. Taylor through a number of different committees associated primarily with the American Heart Association, and during the early parts of the 1970s through collaborative studies on the Lipid Research Clinic program, and more recently in our cooperative studies at Stanford in Minnesota on the community-based multiple risk factor intervention trials. I would like to direct my comments primarily to my association with Dr. Taylor during his stead as committee chairman of the Planning Committee of Physical Activity and Ischemic Heart Disease. As commented on by both Dr. Blackburn and very eloquently by Dr. Remington, there is substantial evidence that the deliberations of that committee not only had a major impact through the primary prevention trial, but through the development of various concepts and principles relative to the application of experimental trials in the population on a great deal of thinking that has transpired since then, both in terms of the scientific approach to such studies in primary prevention as well as the secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease, but is also indicated has had a substantial impact on the politics relative to making decisions in this country relative to the feasibility of such trials. However, beyond the scientific aspects, my involvement with Dr. Taylor, particularly thinking back now 15 years since that committee was in active involvement, I stay astounded that a single chairman could take a committee consisting of individuals with very strong personalities and different backgrounds, including such clinician scientists as Hellerstein, Caddis, Naughton, Bruce, physiologists such as Dill, Balke, and Buskirk, epidemiologists including Epstein, Blackburn, Stamler, biostatisticians such as Remington and Shark, physical activity specialists or physical educators such as Skinner, Montoy, Mastropolo, and conduct multiple meetings over 4 years without any physical and only minor blows being thrown. First of all, I think it would be interesting to analyze this man relative to his characteristics that allow such an achievement, because it's rare to find an administrator and a scientist wrapped up into one. First of all, I think, which is obvious to everybody in the audience, is the respect for the man beyond that for the scientist. Secondly, was the respect for the scientist because of his knowledge in medicine, in physiology, epidemiology, and physical activity. We shouldn't overlook the possibility that his type A personality may have contributed to this. Henry Taylor epitomizes patience. And there are a number of experiences that I was fortunate to have with Dr. Taylor that represents this patience. One example was the whole process that relates to writing. And I think that all of you would agree that his writing is considered eloquent. And it puzzled me as to how this was achieved. During the pilot study on physical activity and ischemic heart disease, I was spending a week or so at the Laboratory of Physiologic Hygiene, and Dr. Taylor had been working on a review paper. And he had worked on it a number of times, and his process, basically, as I interpret it, was to work on the paper until it reached a point of some satisfaction, put the paper in the desk drawer, refuse to look at it for several weeks, bring it back out, and basically rewrite it. Well, this in itself, I think, would result in some eloquence. The key point was when I asked him, when is this paper due? And he says, the paper is due when it's ready. And to me, that demonstrated both patience and the rationale. some of you probably have experienced that who have attempted to obtain manuscripts from Dr. Taylor. A third characteristic, which is, I think, obvious to all of us, is one that has been commented on a number of times in terms of, regardless of his achievements, he remains humble. An example of this was expressed, I think, very nicely during the lunchtime of one of these physical activity and ischemic heart disease planning committees meetings, which Dr. Dill was attending. And at lunch, as I best reconstruct in my mind 15 years later, Dr. Montoy, Dr. Taylor, and I were together. And I proceeded to comment that I was absolutely astounded that Dr. Dill could appear, at least, if not in actuality, to sleep for approximately a half an hour during the meeting. When a pertinent question was raised, he was able to immediately answer it. And Dr. Taylor proceeded to respond that Dr. Dill knows more when he's asleep than when I do when I'm awake. Finally, before I make some scientific comments, is regardless of the appearance of total cooperation and among the laboratory in terms of staff at the Laboratory of Physiologic Hygiene, Dr. Taylor, throughout his career, has not always worked with full theoretical support for some of his interests related to physical activity. In fact, I think a number of you will recall that are in this audience that a senior member in the laboratory has, on repeated occasions, expressed the philosophy that those individuals that study nutrition and heart disease are scientists, those that study physical activity and heart disease are enthusiasts. Thus, under such conditions and adversary opinions, I think one can see why Dr. Taylor was such an able chairman of the Physical Activity and Heart Disease Planning Committee. I would like to make several comments relative to the value of the deliberations of that committee in defining or determining the parameters necessary for successful completion of experimental population studies. During this time, with his leadership, things were achieved which I really had never been exposed to, such as the development of power calculations that provide a scientific basis for study design of this sort. And it's Dr. Remington pointed out that it was the basis of those calculations plus the practical experience of the pilot study that led to the conclusion that primary trials of physical activity and coronary heart disease were probably not successfully achievable. However, the same application of the thinking process that went into the primary prevention trials really needs to be applied to those studies that have been implemented in the area of secondary prevention in physical activity in coronary heart disease. As most of you are aware, there have been 4 studies of this sort published. The Kantala study in Helsinki, which if one takes some basic principles that were driven home during the planning committee meetings of an adequate sample size and some type of consideration of an F factor, the idea that once you implement an intervention, there's going to be some period of time before results occur, particularly when we're dealing with morbidity and mortality. If one applies those principles to that study, I think we would all conclude it was an inadequate test of the hypothesis. The second study is the so-called Göteborg study in Sweden, the Sani or Wilhelmsen and Sani study, which addresses the issue of randomization of post-MI patients into exercise and usual care, in which over a 4-year period with 351 patients randomized into the study, there is not a statistically significant difference in risk or development of coronary heart disease mortality or reinfarctions as a result of exercise training. However, if one looks back at the Planning Committee proceedings and analyzes this study from the problem of adherence, one, I think, would conclude that with less than 50% adherence after the first year of the trial, that it is unlikely that that is an adequate test of the hypothesis. The third trial, which is a so-called Ontario Heart Disease Study, which is a collaborative trial of five centers in Ontario, also has shown no difference between a group randomized to high-intensity exercise versus a group assigned to so-called placebo or light-intensity exercise. The major problem in this trial is the fact that the mortality rate or event rate in the so-called placebo or control group is so low that it is almost unachievable to attain a lower event rate. Mortality due to reinfarction in that study shows in the control group a rate of 0.8% per year over a four-year period. Either subjects were selected who were at so low a risk that lower risk is really not that much achievable, or that placebo exercise along with high-intensity exercise has a risk-lowering effect that cannot be separated. And finally, I would just like to comment on the National Exercise and Heart Disease Project, of which Dr. Hellerstein and other in the audience were primary investigators. This study, as Dr. Hellerstein indicated, and he didn't state that due to lack of finances, this study really did not show a significant difference, and it was not due to study design or implementation. And I'd have to say that much of the strategy for the development of that study came from the involvement of those individuals in the physical activity and planning, physical activity and heart disease planning committee. I would like to read the summary paragraph from the main report from the National Exercise and Heart Disease Project. At first, you will think, because of its conservativeness, as already indicated by Dr. Paffenbarger, that it may have been written by Dr. Taylor, but it wasn't. The case for exercise in persons with known myocardial infarction is neither proved nor disproved. Enough information was gathered from this trial, and sufficient success in obtaining continued participation was achieved to conclude that a full-scale trial of the merits of exercise for patients with cardiac disease is feasible. It is of interest that if the 37% benefit from exercise reported had been observed in a comparable study of as few as 1,400 patients, the results would have been judged statistically significant. That paragraph can be interpreted and has meaning in many different ways. That paragraph reminds me of advice given to me in 1969 in a restaurant in Chicago where Dr. Taylor and I had to stop because it was about minus 30 degrees and the wind was blowing, and trying to walk from our hotel to the annual meetings of the Epidemiology Council of the American Heart Association. And in discussing future careers in research, he stated that research is the greatest bureaucracy ever devised. No any one study raises more questions than it answers. Thank you, Dr. Taylor.
The last speaker is Dr. Russell Lupker, who's a member of the Laboratory of Physiological Hygiene and a collaborator with Henry in cardiovascular surveys and community educational research, also a sailing partner and tennis partner. Does he glare at you across the tennis net?
Sometimes. Not when he's winning.
I'll tell you after the meeting what he said to me once across the net.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rao. I'm last, and I intend to be brief and resist the urge to be summative. I think that's assigned elsewhere. I'm honored to be here and present at this symposium, and particularly with such distinguished students and colleagues of Dr. Taylor. What I'll talk about very briefly are some comments on the prevention of chronic diseases in populations. And as I've heard the talks today, what we're doing now in our researches, at least in part of our researches, seem the fruition and the logical extension of much of the work that has been done by Dr. Taylor and by many others around the world. I don't think I realized until today the extent of that work and the historical base formed by Dr. Taylor's efforts in the scientific researches in exercise physiology and epidemiological methods. It certainly speaks to the vitality of that work and the approaches that Dr. Taylor has taken. Presently, we're involved in community health education efforts to reduce morbidity and mortality from chronic diseases, specifically atherosclerotic diseases. Dr. Taylor's researches have been central in both providing the scientific base in the area of physical activity, allowing us to make recommendations to the general population, and secondly, in measuring what we do, specifically in terms of survey of the population, epidemiologic survey, and the methods that he has developed in that area. And in the area of physical activity, how do you find out what people are really doing? His efforts have been central to those scientific researches. Practically, I've profited from having him across the hall from me in working on those protocols and researches. I have to say, in listening to Dr. Brozak earlier, we no longer share offices in the laboratory. Perhaps that's because we have grown, or perhaps we're less compatible or less reasonable than we'd like to believe. The community programs in which we're involved now have the goals of reducing morbidity and mortality from atherosclerotic diseases in whole populations. The studies are longitudinal, lasting 9 to 10 years. They involve whole communities, and in the particular Minnesota instance, 400,000 people followed over that period of time. They involve multiple education strategies and have targets including blood pressure, nutrition or cholesterol, cigarette smoking, and last, but certainly not least, physical activity. We've argued, and you've heard today a number of points of view on whether physical activity directly affects ultimately coronary heart disease. We aren't trying to answer that question, but indeed, at the very least, we agree that it has positive effects on the other risk factors I've mentioned. There are colleagues and similar studies, certainly many of you know, at Stanford, at Brown University, at Pennsylvania, and others around the world. Let me have the first slide, have a couple slides, just to show some of our efforts with relation to physical activity in at least the Minnesota study. We have a number of specific objectives in terms of physical activity, trying to get people in the community to increase our average caloric expenditures by increasing the frequency and duration of walking, of the minimal activity, for those who are able to increase higher level activities or become involved in higher level activities. And finally, in a society that seems bent on reducing physical activity to the minimum, to reverse that trend and increase both knowledge and acceptance of that, of those activities important to health. Specifically in our studies of six communities, we're looking to increase, and these to a group like the American College of Sports Medicine probably seem like minimal goals, but this is increasing across entire towns energy expenditure of 50 to 100 kilocalories and doubling the proportion of vigorous leisure physical activity. We're proposing to do this by direct educational methods, utilizing in the communities not only our own efforts, but those of groups such as the YMCA or Park District, programs in the school system, trying to get our physician and other professional colleagues to become more involved in physical activity recommendations, utilizing community organizations that are already there, and finally utilizing that great panacea of all health education, the mass media. Can I have the lights on, please? That, in essence, is a program looking and testing issues of physical activity and promotion of physical activity in a multifactorial design in whole communities over a long period of time to reduce morbidity and mortality from coronary heart disease. Those recommendations that you've seen in large part stem from the researches of Henry Taylor and others of what is reasonable and appropriate to recommend at this point in time to the general population. The measurement of the effects of those recommendations also, as I said before, rely heavily on Dr. Taylor's work, including efforts to measure physical activity and fitness in the general population, thus the effects of the programs, and survey methods looking at lipids, blood pressure, and other aspects of health behavior. In summary, I think our present efforts, our ongoing researches, speak to the vitality of the work that Dr. Taylor has given us and continues to give us. Here, as we move into the public arena, an attempt to improve the health of entire communities. I might comment personally that although people before me have said this indeed is not really a retirement, that in the new stadium, which we've just moved into 2 weeks ago, Stadium Gate 20, in addition to Stadium Gate 27, I have effectively managed to move Henry Taylor's office next to mine, where I hope to continue having his both consultation and collaboration. Thank you.
Great, perfect. Thank you, Russ. Dean Stauffer, you missed a great revelation at the beginning of the afternoon, which it was admitted indirectly by Dr. Keyes, that the laboratory was named Physiological Hygiene because it couldn't be defined and thus anything was possible. This sort of institution and these sorts of activities are not always well tolerated by administrators and deans. We are in the remarkable situation that the only two deans of the School of Public Health, Gaylord Anderson and Lee Stauffer, who succeeded him, have strongly supported the laboratory, have recognized that it's a part of public health, and have successfully defended it against the cries that we weren't contributing to the credit hours on which capitation was based and so forth in graduate teaching. He has so strongly supported our efforts that he serves now on our Heart Health Program Board, and he has mortgaged the school's endowment to help us with our new laboratory space. He is pleased, and we're pleased, to be the representative of the university administration as well as the school and the regents as well in the presentation to Henry Taylor, Dean Lee Stauffer.
Thank you. In keeping with the warm tone of this, I just would observe that it's been easy to defend the laboratory, the physiological hygiene, being in the stadium, since in view of the athletic record at Minnesota in recent years, we thought there should be something associated with physical activity in the stadium, at least. Dr. Taylor, would you come forward, please? It is my great pleasure to be here today. Henry is a representative of the Regents of the University of Minnesota. They do not work after 5 o'clock on holiday weekends, but deans do, and therefore it was my privilege to be able to present this to you, and it is an expression of special regard from the Regents, and I'd like to read it for you. From the Regents of the University of Minnesota, Henry Longstreet Taylor. Professor Henry Longstreet Taylor received his Ph.D. in physiology from the University of Minnesota in 1941 and has since served for over 40 years as professor in the Laboratory of Physiological Hygiene, School of Public Health. In his joint graduate school appointments in physiology and physiological hygiene, he has developed the careers of several distinguished physiological investigators. Professor Taylor has made unique and noteworthy contributions to scientific understanding of human performance and of the relationship of habitual physical activity to heart and blood vessel disease. He has received particular international recognition for his development of the classic measurement of maximal aerobic capacity in humans and his assessment tool for leisure time activity. His findings in several countries that regular physical activity is important in human metabolic function, but does not protect the population against heart disease risk in the presence of other significant risk factors, is a major contribution. The university's pride in Dr. Taylor's contributions is enhanced by the knowledge that he's a University of Minnesota graduate. This expression of our regard is given, therefore, in recognition of his scientific leadership, his dedication to the enhancement of knowledge about the prevention of cardiovascular diseases, and the international reputation he has given the university in his field. Presented on the 29th day of May, 1982, and it's signed by Dwayne Wilson, the Secretary of the Board of Regents, by C. Peter McGraw, the President, and by Dr. Lyle A. French, the Vice President of Health Sciences, and Wenda Moore, the Chairman of the Board of Regents. Henry, I'm very pleased to present this to you.
Henry Taylor, would you like to respond to this round of applause in any way other than your usual modesty? Then I presume you'll do so tonight.
Thank you very much.
Great. The bus will leave from where it dropped you off on Washington. One bus, so indicated, will take you right to the festivities downtown, those who are going. The other will take to the auditorium and the Hyatt and wait very briefly and then continue to the Science Center. We'll see you at the Science and Art Museum in St. Paul, those who are going to the banquet. Thank you all. Nice finish. Brought it all to the end.